Welcome to Gimcrack Video. How may I help you?
Hey, what's going on, man? You got anything new to watch?
No, but we are running a special on sequels.
Is that over there on that shelf that says that it's not for human consumption?
No, there's one right next to it that says $3 for $1.
Oh, let's just grab some. What could go wrong?
Enjoy your selection.
So how's the apocalypse treating you?
You know, it's bad, but it's not as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, the liquor's free, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I had to trudge through a river of blood to get to work today, but I still had to go to work, so it's mostly the same. So
yeah, I started up this kind of side project with locust spray that I'm working on, because those bastards are getting real annoying. But
yeah, especially with like the stinging tails.
I think I can make some money off. Yeah, I think I might be able to make a few bucks off this.
Can you believe it's the apocalypse and Taylor Swift is still touring?
Well, you know what? She is a committed woman.
Really think the tickets would have been cheaper by now, but nope.
No, they went up. I mean, I had to like a little chunk of my soul. I had to like sign a waiver and give that to just to get in the parking lot. So it was bad.
Truly, it is a cruel summer.
I'm a Swiftie. In the apocalypse, I'm a Swiftie now.
So we're watching Prom Night 3 this week.
Yeah, I'll give a little intro.
Yeah. Why don't you start the show?
Hello, all you lovely listeners. It's prom season here on the Found on Shelf podcast, the only podcast that you are listening to at this very minute. Probably, maybe, hopefully. Might be weird if you're listening to like two podcasts at once, but. Anyway, my name is Dustin, and joining me is my prom king and yours, Patrick.
I usually don't get king. This is a new one for me.
Yeah, I was going to do me prom king and you prom queen, but no, you deserve the king title.
I do have the elbow gloves on tonight, though.
Oh, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, that's...
So we're watching Prom Night 3.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any of the Prom Night movies before this?
I have not. But for all of your prom needs, visit us at foundonshelfpod.com for all of your prom attire. No, I have not seen parts 1 and 2. I know a bit about parts 1, and I learned a little bit about part 2, but I actually have not watched them.
So they're completely different?
Yeah.
Parts 1 and parts 4 specifically are different than this movie.
Right.
It's an interesting little movie you've got for us today for this Canadian horror franchise.
Yeah, you know, I decided to take it back to prom. Why not? Because, you know, how was your prom? Did you go to prom?
I was homeschooled.
That didn't answer my question.
No, I didn't. The fuck am I taking to prom, Dustin?
Hey, you were in the South, you know.
Listen. Okay. You know what the sad thing about this is, though?
What?
I'm still the most normal homeschooled person you have ever had a conversation with.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I've talked to a few of them, and I'm like, oof.
And you can clock us. It's not hard.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them get off that strong, like, McPoyle vibe from It's Always Sunny.
Oh, God.
You don't. Don't worry. You're okay. So you were homeschooled, like, from when? From what point?
Second grade.
Oh, wow. Second grade on all the way through high school, huh?
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, I was just forced to go to public school the whole time. I don't know which is better, necessarily. The public schools in California or being homeschooled. I don't know. I could imagine. I did go to my prom, and it was pretty much, I mean, the proms that they always show on like movies and stuff are never at all how anything really is.
So you mean my approximation of the high school experience by watching movies and television is in no way close to reality?
Yeah, no.
Didn't do the hand jive like in Greece?
No. There was not.
Did Marvin Berry show up to your prom?
No, there was probably like 8 people dancing and then a bunch of people standing around the side and a couple of us sneaking off into the bathroom to drink out of our flasks or whatever else we had.
So I've poured rum into this bowl of punch that I have sitting by the computer for nothing.
I mean, not for nothing.
That's... I wanted to like encapsulate the real experience, but I really should just use the flask that I just take with me everywhere anyway.
Yeah, well, see, here's the problem. And much like we got into a discussion about the Purge not too long ago, where, you know, you think, okay, all crime is legal, you just would murder people. No. You would just take it simple. So much like being in high school and only having access to a limited supply of alcohol, you're not just going to dump it into a punch so everyone else can get drunk. You're going to save that for yourself and your buddies so you guys can get drunk.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes, it's like the meme that comes around every year. That's like, watch these candies; they're gonna give your kids free ecstasy. And I'm like, nobody is buying ecstasy to give it away.
Right. It's just, you know, it's not economically sound.
this is the podcast you come to for all of your economic advice.
Mm-hmm. And prom advice, economic prom.
AdviceShow.com. Economic prom advice show. It sounds like American comedy for people.
We're going to make that someday. And it's not just going to be drunk in a cabin in Vegas. It's going to really happen. What's your pitch for asking somebody to prom?
Asking somebody to prom or asking someone to prom night 3, the last kiss?
Wait, what's your elevator pitch to try to get to take a date? To go see Prom Night 3.
You want to see this romantic comedy about a teen who falls in love with a ghost and has to choose between her and the love of his life, who's a real person. Also, people get killed.
Yeah. Okay. Then, yeah. Let's just play the trailer, and then we'll get into it here. I don't have anything else to say about that. I enjoyed this movie. It kind of gave me a My Boyfriend's Back kind of vibe, but as far as like kind of the silliness of it goes, I think this movie stands good as a standalone movie.
I think it was a comedy written by people who didn't understand joke structure.
Yeah, that happens quite often, especially when you try to mix comedy and horror. Like it's sometimes like
you got to be good at two things now.
Yeah.
It's not like you could phone in the horror to add the comedy. Now you got to be good at comedy and horror.
Yeah,
it's rough.
We'll play the trailer, which has got a little bit of both in there for you. So let me make sure this is the right trailer. We'll see if I messed up or not.
Today's inter-school chess club tournament has been canceled. Club members are asked to report to the library and play with themselves.
This is Alex Gray. He's intelligent. He's athletic. He's an average guy.
When's lunch?
See anything you like?
This is Mary Lou Maloney. She's a good sport.
Touchdown!
She's sexy. She's dead. He was looking for something different. She was looking for something new. But when they got together, it was something deadly.
You really gotta stop killing people.
Those kind of girls, you just fool around with them once, they turn on you, they rip your heart out, show it to you, then they tear all over it with their spike heels and ram it down your throat.
But what about our relationship?
What relationship? You kill them, I bury them in the football field. This is not your basic boy meets girl here. No, that's it. It's over.
But even hell hath no fury like Mary Lou Maloney. And on prom night, Alex Gray will learn breaking up is hard to do. Prom Night 3. The Last Kiss, a romantic comedy from hell.
Women.
I feel like I've let you down here.
Why?
I just now realized that Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss, is named for the song Last Kiss, and I didn't clip it, did you?
You know what? I don't even know that song, I think. I probably heard it, but yeah. No, I did not.
Okay, so in Prom Night 2, Mary Lou Maloney dies in the 50s, right?
Right.
So do a 50s pastiche. Do you know why her name is Mary Lou?
No.
Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart.
Okay. I know that song, yeah.
Yeah, that's why. The Last Kiss is another song from the 50s about his guy on a date with his girl, and then he gets into a car accident and she dies in his arms in bleeding on all the shattered glass.
Okay.
Yeah, Eddie Vedder or Pearl Jam. I don't know if it's Pearl Jam or if it's Eddie by himself. They do a cover of it in the 90s, but it's a 50s song, and it's like, I held her close, I kissed her, our last kiss. That's why this is called The Last Kiss.
Okay, well, that makes sense. That sort of, I guess. Yeah, why not? Why not? Well,
the thing people kept saying about this movie. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Like you kind of hinted at earlier, the writer and director... I'll kind of get into him first just to get it out of the way. His name is Ron Oliver, and this was his first directing gig.
He's pretty successful, I think, right?
Yeah, well, he went on to do a lot of different TV shows. He did a lot of Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps.
Oh, sweet.
And it was really because the creators of the show saw this movie and were like, hey, you can do a lot with no budget, so why not? So there you go. So he decided to do those, and he used to host a show on Canadian Network YTV called Oliver's Twist. Get it? Because his name's Ron Oliver. So he wrote, like you said, he wrote part two, and he wrote part two and three at the same time, and they were, shocking, not intended to be prom night movies.
That's true. Prom Night 2 was meant to be a standalone film. I think it was called The Haunting or something High.
Yeah, The Haunting of Hamilton High. But it's interesting that he wrote this as a part two to that movie. And from what I've read and looked at, they're pretty different thematically movies completely. Like,
yeah, so...
This one's almost like a spoof of that one.
Yeah, this does feel like a spoof of what that movie was. Boy, also... I know I'm always one to be like, let's do a queer reading of this, but I didn't think it would be so easy with this one. I didn't have to force it at all.
it's got some tones.
It might be a reference to Rebel Without a Cause. Cause the relationship in that movie is kind of like the relationship with him and his friend with Alex and his friend in this movie.
Yeah. His buddy that takes all the classes he takes and just gets so bummed out. Yeah, he's got some things.
Did you want to walk us through the Prom Night series, or do you want me to do that?
You can do that, but first, we'll do that. We'll do this first. So the film was financed by a company called Live Entertainment, which was owned by a Mr. Jose Menendez. Okay. Are you familiar with Jose Menendez?
Not actively should I be.
Okay, so I got dates for you here. August 17th, 1989 was the Thursday before production was supposed to start, right? On Prom Night 3.
Yeah.
So our writer-director, Ron Oliver, goes out to dinner with Jose and his family. His wife, Kitty, and their two sons, Eric and Lyle Menendez.
No.
So 3 days after this dinner on Sunday the 20th, the Menendez brothers murdered their parents.
Jesus Christ.
He went out to dinner with these guys 3 days before that all happened. And then the following Monday, Ron found out production was going to be pushed back by about 2 weeks. And so they could figure out all that stuff. So yeah, Eric and Lyle Menendez, the Menendez brothers who murdered their parents. Their dad financed this film.
That explains an awful lot. Because like the financial, I'm sure that really strung the budget.
I mean, it could have caused some rifts.
Wow. Was not expecting that.
Don't worry. I'm going to go darker a little bit later.
God damn it.
So yeah, go ahead and tell us the history of Prom Night. What do we got here?
Yeah, so the first Prom Night movie is completely unrelated to these. It's a standard revenge movie. These kids, have a prank that goes wrong. Someone gets hurt. And then years later, That person comes back and murders all of them on prom night. Prom night.
Okay.
Jamie Lee Curtis film. Of the three Jamie Lee Curtis slashers, she's in more horror movies than that. But the slashers that come up, you know, you've got Halloween, which people say is the first slasher, but that's reductive and not really true. And then you've got Prom Night, and you've got Terror Train. Of those, obviously, Halloween's the best one, but Terror Train is really good, and Prom Night is just kind of okay.
Yeah.
Although Terror Train has a similar plot.
Okay.
Of like a person getting harmed on a prank and then coming back years later to kill them all. But that one takes place on a train at New Year's Eve at a costume party.
Oh, yeah. I was going to watch that one instead of Bloody New Year's, but decided
Much better.
Yeah, which is why we didn't watch it.
I love our different approaches to films. I'm like, I've seen this movie. You should see it. And you're like, that one seems too good for Patrick.
Yeah, yeah, no, we wouldn't do that. I was like, Terror Train, that sounds good. Next. We're doing Bloody New Year's. So part two, what happened?
Part two, Hello, Mary Lou, is a completely different movie. It is Mary Lou Mahoney dies at prom night. I don't remember for her. I tried to watch it immediately after this movie, but Shudder kept crashing on me.
Shudder was like, you don't want to watch this. You don't want to watch this.
Yeah. But a couple of people were responsible for her death at prom. Promise what she cared about. She wanted to be prom queen. That's all she cared about. The thing that happened here was she gets burned alive at prom.
Okay.
And then in the 80s, they awaken her spirit, I think through like a gem or something from like the crown or something. Again,
sure.
I
would
have exact facts if I could have rewatched the movie before this, but sometimes the internet and apps and streaming services don't actually want to, you know, render you what you're paying for.
Yeah, you know, why would they?
That's a problem. So she's loose and she possesses the
spirit. She's loose?
Her
prom night does that to some people.
Well, okay, she's very sexual in this movie. And her spirit possesses Vicky, and then slowly Vicky just slowly becomes her. And Michael Ironside's in this movie.
But okay. Like,
it is a horror comedy, but it slants more to horror, and it's pulling from a lot of sources. Ron Oliver is like being influenced by like The Exorcist and things like that to make this movie. And every character is named after like a horror movie director. So like Vicky's last name is Vicky Carpenter. There's a hint that I think it's Kelly Hinnenlotter. Name every major character after a horror director, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So there are jokes in it, but it's more in the line with being a horror first comedy.
Right.
And yeah, she gets very sexual and does a lot of very interesting things.
It's a horror movie that has some comedy, whereas this movie is trying to be a comedy movie that has some horror.
Yeah. And it's not sticking the landing as well as the previous movie did. Right. Like, there's a scene in the other movie where, like, the commitment to horror is like she's walking around completely naked in the women's locker room. The person she's coming to like take revenge on is hidden in a locker. She senses it with her ghost powers, and so she uses her ghostly powers to literally crush the locker. The whole row of lockers just crushes instantly.
All right.
Like, there's some cool shit going on in this movie. People are getting hung by sheets. They're getting almost decapitated by paper cutters. There's wind and ghost effects, and it's cool.
Okay.
This movie is a direct sequel to that one. And Mary Lou Maloney's in hell, escapes, and then wreaks havoc in a more comedic fashion.
Yeah, kind of weird that the same guy wrote them at the same time. And...
yeah.
And they're like kind of like you said, like, oh, like it's almost a spoof off of that one.
Mm-hmm. And I think the second one's in 87 and this one's in 90.
Yeah, this one kind of came out. Yeah, this one was recorded in the summer of 89. So, yeah, it came out in 90. And like I kind of alluded to earlier, there are two versions of this film. And one is an edited, I guess, slightly TV version. It removes some gore, some language, and some nudity, or the one shot of nudity.
Yeah, there's barely any of that.
Yeah. But for some reason, the uncut version is nearly impossible to find. It was only released on the very initial VHS run and in the Australian DVD market. And that was it.
The Australian market.
Yeah. But okay. Thanks to the powers of the internet, we were initially going to watch the one that was the edited version because that was the only one I could find. And then I went and searched and searched and searched, and I happened to find a copy of the uncut version on YouTube. So if you just go on YouTube and look up Prom Night 3 Uncut, you'll see it. It's by a guy named Extro, which is interesting because he has no other movies, nothing else like that. It's the rest of it's like home videos and stuff, well, which is
good. The username's a reference to another horror movie.
Absolutely, yeah, which we might watch part 3 of that.
Oh, God.
But
I think Vinegar Syndrome has a release of Extro 3.
All right. So the version that we will be watching, I did watch both versions. The one that we are going to be talking about,
you watched
mostly
twice.
Watched it 3 times, Patrick.
Dustin, what did you find to say about this movie after three viewings?
I got seven pages of notes. I'm already on page 2 though. So
What is your methodology? How can you extrapolate this much information? Like, this is not a criticism. This is just.
All right. Do you want to know what I do first?
Yeah. Right.
So first, before I even watch the movie, I don't even watch the movie yet. I look at IMDb and I look at Wikipedia, mm-hmm. and I pull up all the different actors and actresses and directors and writers and producers. And I look at them all to see if there's anything interesting anywhere. And then if I find something interesting, I dig a little bit deeper and I start looking at all this other stuff, and then I write that all down, and then I watch the movie, and then I start taking notes about the movie, and then I take the shit that I learned and I pepper it in with my notes in the middle somewhere, and then I go back and watch the movie and mark it for sound bites that I want to put, and that's usually my strategy.
I have 3 notes for this movie. None of them are about this movie. All of them are reminders to work on jokes.
I'll take you down some paths with this movie. We got some.
How inappropriate is my SVU joke going to be when we get there? How dark is this going to go?
I mean, it's going to get dark at one point. It's going to get so dark at one point that if you edit it out of the episode, I'll be all right with it. But I feel like it's my duty as a researcher to get it all out there and talk about it. So
fair enough.
With that said, let's go ahead and start this fine film 30 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah, go ahead.
I like the opening scene with, it's at a graveyard, and then it kind of goes down to what they're considering, I guess, hell, which looks like a high school hallway with red lights on it. And chorus line dancing women in lingerie chained to brick floors.
Well, you know, we've all been to a cabaret, but like.
So I was torn between watching this and watching Warlock 3, and this opening scene was more interesting than the entire movie of Warlock 3 that I watched. Oh, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched half an hour of it, 45 minutes or so. I was like, this is fucking boring. But anyway,
Prom Night 3. Electric Boogaloo. All right. So Prom Night 3, Mary Lou Maloney has a nail file on her person, uses it to escape her supernatural chains from hell,
mm-hmm.
and wind back up in the 80s. At Hamilton High, it is 3 years later. It is cursed. Everyone knows that shit happens there all the time, and ghosts are about, and weird, evil, unexplainable shit happens. It starts out at a band recital, dedicating mm-hmm. the new auditorium that burnt down in a fire in the previous film, a supernatural yep. and unexplained fire that they bring up a couple times.
Yeah. And this is kind of where the, straight edge, like comedy, but like that almost like trying to be like Airplane style, where it's like a completely serious line, but it comes off funny. But like you said, they don't nail it. I got the principal's kind of speech here.
I think this puts to rest all those ghosts at Hamilton High. The strange noises, the mysterious earth tremors, the vanishing students, these are all in the past.
All in the past. By the way, do you know who that was, by the way?
Principal Belden?
No. This is actually his second appearance on the podcast.
Oh, no.
A gentleman named Roger Dunn.
He done fucked up.
He played Dr. Gordon in Deadly Eyes. And there, he was...
There is no way that my mind could recall movie we did 2 years ago at the start of all this in that much detail. And that is 66 movies in the past.
Okay. Now, hold on. I got another one. Let me check the date on this one and see if you can remember it from this far back. Hold on here. I should have been prepared for that one. Let's take you back to 1989. Can you remember?
Can I remember 1989? Mm-hmm. What month?
He did watch this. He was the voice of Charles Dietz in the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Okay, yeah, I did grow up on that.
Yeah, that was him. He did the voice of Charles Dietz. So there you go.
He cuts the ribbon in this scene and cuts his fingers off.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood splatters everywhere, and immediately ghost wind comes around and blows everyone out the auditorium.
Yeah. So this was the first edit. The finger, like the scissors cut the fingertip off, and then that was it. You didn't see the fingertip on the ground. You didn't see the blood spraying out everywhere. It was just cut, and that was it.
I mean, that's the thing about this one. There's not really a lot of gore. It's not like Tammy and the T-Rex, right?
No,
Tammy and the T-Rex has a lot of gore.
Well, they completely changed the tone of that movie.
Tammy and the T-Rex is an interesting film. I'm going to go to a slight tangent. Because it's not entirely unrelated to this, but like every now and then you find one of these movies that doesn't know what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tammy and the T-Rex is structured like a children's movie. Mm-hmm. The comedy, the plot, the characters, they're all things you would see in like a children's movie in the 90s.
Right. Which is why it was a PG-13 like sci-fi comedy movie.
Yeah. But however, the original cut has a lot of gore, and also she has a lot of sex with her dinosaur boyfriend. And the movie ends with her doing a striptease for the disembodied brain of her boyfriend. So like there's a lot of sexually charged stuff in the movie, and a lot of gore and violence that are just shoved into what is clearly written to be a children's movie. It's wild.
Yeah, that's an interesting take.
You've seen it?
I've seen the original one, okay. Or not the original one. I saw the edited one.
Oh, you see the edited cut.
Yeah. I read about the Unco, because that was only just like unearthed like within the past decade or so.
Yeah, I've got the Vinegar Syndrome release of it. Like I pre-ordered that shit immediately. God, I have the lithographic cover. Fuck yes. Okay, so this movie also doesn't know what it wants to be, but our main character is Alex Gray.
Yeah.
His girlfriend Sarah, who is the best part of this movie.
Oh yeah.
And her and his friend, who I feel like he wants to be more than friends.
Yeah, he's a little close.
The central conflict in the first part of the film is Alex is unsatisfied with his life. The moment we are introduced with him, he is having trouble deciding if he wants to spend the summer riding around on a motorbike he doesn't own with his best friend from town to town, as his friend wants him to do. Or going to his girlfriend, which he does have, farm, and then just kind of hanging out for a couple months. So hang out with your girlfriend for a couple months, or hang out with your best friend for a couple months. But the best friend requires you to own a motorbike that you don't currently own.
Yeah.
An interesting thing to be divided about in between these two separate obstacles to show tension between him and his relationships in his life. He also is at odds with himself because he goes to see the guidance counselor, whose name is Miss Guidance, and she tells him he's failing everything. He's trying to go to med school. She's like, don't even apply. It doesn't matter. You're too stupid. And it literally says, some people are born to dig ditches. So then he goes and he Googles, he doesn't Google.
Nope.
Then he's upset, obviously. Yeah. His girlfriend, also he's forgotten his anniversary with his girlfriend, but they're going to go on a romantic date, which apparently is picking up hamburgers and going to a drive-in.
Yeah.
And he's upset at the date. And the reason he's upset is in between saying, let's go on a date. And now, in the visit to the guidance counselor's office, he is upset with the idea that he's not going to be a doctor. So he's looked up a whole bunch of things in his life, and he feels like he's just average. He's the apparently statistically average height of, was he say 5'10"?
Yeah, I don't think that's the average height.
But I don't think so either, but I'm short, yeah. So I don't know. he's like the average this, the average that. I can't wait to go. Did you know that the average dick size is?
Yeah, he didn't do that one.
Weird, right? Yeah. Just like he over, but like all the things, like I'm just average.
Average, just shoe size, average, yeah.
I just want to do something different with my life. Yeah. I want to stand out. And the way he's saying it is the implication is maybe I don't want to be in a relationship with you. Because one of the things he says is people are what's going to happen is I'm going to get married at the average age to get married. I'm going to have 2-point-something kids. Da, 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 da. I'm like, okay, but you're telling this to the person who is romantically interested to you on your anniversary. I'd say that's a bad move, but who am I to judge?
Yeah. She seems awfully tolerant.
She's too good for him.
Oh, way too good. Way too good.
That's the conflict, right? He is having a midlife crisis at 17.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. I say maybe that reads into a 40-year-old person writing the script. I could be wrong.
No, you didn't go to high school. You don't know.
I don't know.
Shit's rough, man.
So I was asked to provide context for the next bit. Apparently it hinges on the fact that on a list of potential sponsor opportunities for the show, there was a, let's see if I get this right, horse cock dildo. Like a replica? Like a replica. Oh, okay. What the f***?
Well, you know, you get to go through a lot of the same symptoms, right? You get your ears pierced, you buy a fast car, same thing, right?
Yeah, you have questionable relationships with your best friend. You know, just things happen.
Yeah, things happen.
So,
so how's reviewing that horse cock dildo going for you?
It'll be on our FetLife profile tomorrow.
Norm would like a word.
Why is that screenshot still up on my... Oh, that is hilarious. I literally just moved my mouse and the screenshot I took you was still on my computer. Oh,
there's
my
no
God.
No context for this, but I don't know. I might be part of that in.
I am so glad that my kid did not hop on the computer. Like, what's that?
Oh, no. Just dicking around on the Found on Chef podcast. That's going to be our new name. We're just going to change it to just dicking around.
Just horsing around. You want to make Mr. Ed talk? Just get one of those.
And it goes on like that for another 20 minutes? Come on, guys. We're cutting all of this. There's no way we need this much time spent on penis jokes. Let's just do the ad copy so that I can get back to my rental shop, please. Thank you. What is it? Let's see. Yeah. Oh, you've gone with the horse cock dildo as a sponsor. This is the ad. No, I'm not reading that. We're not doing it this week.
So yeah, he's tired of being average. He decides to run back to the school in the middle of the night to study. And this is where he, Mr. Alex, runs into Mary Lou, who has kind of got burned. She says, kiss me, and he kisses. And then they start making out on top of the American flag.
That doesn't seem average.
Yeah. And then he wakes up naked, covered in the flag. He does drop the towel. And if you were paying attention, you see ass and balls.
I missed the balls. Saw
there,
the ass.
There were balls. In the edited version, no balls. No ass, no balls.
No. Right. On the scale of hot people that we've rated on this podcast, where do his balls stand?
I'm not a connoisseur of balls, so I don't know.
Fair enough.
Ballasaur? I don't know.
Baller, please.
Yeah.
Shot caller.
4.5 hairs out of seven. I don't know. I don't know how to rate balls.
It apparently is like 3 miles to the bathroom because he keeps running down halls to try and run away from people and turns down another hall to try and run away from people, try to send another hall to try and run away from people. Like the gag is old way before he ever gets to the bathroom. But.
And instead of going into the stall, as soon as he gets into the bathroom, he just stands in front of the mirror.
He checks his hair.
Yeah.
And then the jock comes out and he calls him a slur and walks out the room. And I'm like, well, that this is the most realistic interpretation of teenagers in this movie so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it was an interesting comment.
OK, so here's my problem with this movie. This is the first step that they had a chance to do something interesting and then didn't. And again, this is my problem for trying to queer every movie that we watch, but wouldn't it have been way more interesting for this to take the same exact plot as, or at least same exact plot device as Prom Night 2, Hello, Mary Lou, the way a lot of horror movies do. Like, we've established rules, let's double down those rules. The first Hellraiser, the box summons the demons, you know. The box, you solved it, we came, right? So what happens in the second movie? You solve the box again to bring the demons back. That's right. The rule. Dims the rules. So, if the rule is Mary Lou Maloney can possess the living to exert her will, and she fucks this guy as a ghost, wouldn't it stand to reason that she could then possess him? And wouldn't that be way more interesting than I'm dating a ghost?
Yeah, that would be interesting to have the female ghost possess the male and see where that goes.
That no, it's the 80s. They were going to fuck that up. But it would have been interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first one I'm going to throw. There's more. But okay. That's the first time they could have done something really interesting with this movie. There's a couple more cool things that I thought they could have done later down the line that would have made it stand out.
We do have Sarah, his girlfriend, who he liked, and she throws out this fantastic line.
She thought she'd be mad at me.
I don't get mad. I bake.
I don't get mad. I bake.
I don't get mad. I bake. Yeah.
Yeah. In case you do not recognize Sarah Monroe, played by the great Cynthia Preston.
What was she in?
She first of all, she shares my birthday, okay, which makes her awesome already.
I came in so hot because I looked all over her IMDb page and I couldn't figure out what I'd know her from.
She's the voice of Zelda in the Legend of Zelda cartoons from the 80s.
The one who will excuse me, princess. Yeah, that
she
one.
She was said princess.
Also she was the Mario cartoon and the Captain cartoon.
Yep. You never watched Captain N, the Game Master?
I did not watch Captain N, the Game Master.
I'll get you some copies of that. It was great. I will get you a copy. Anyway, she was on a couple of episodes of Friday the 13th, the series. And she was in a bunch of episodes of General Hospital. That was kind of
I just think she just has like those eyebrows and that hairstyle. It's just like the way you would style yourself in the 80s at the time. And I think that's just the vibe that I'm getting.
And she is now the co-founder and creative producer for a company called Syndicate. Get it? It's C-Y-N-D-I, like Cynthia, but Syndicate. Syndicate VR that works on story-driven virtual reality games. So that's kind of cool.
I'd be interested to know what titles they come out with.
Yeah, they had a couple of things that they were working on that I saw pop up.
Drunken Bar Fight, right?
Oh, God, Drunken Bar Fight, so fun, so much fun. But no, I think they were doing like some sci-fi one. Just a couple of, Beyond the Stars is one of them, which was like a space flight training and research simulator. They did another one that was supposed to be like a virtual reality version of a tabletop RPG, which is kind of like meant to be like.
It's a strange one.
Yeah, but it's like your I don't know. It's kind of interesting. And so that's just kind of the stuff that she's working on, which I think is a departure from this kind of stuff, but it's still really cool.
Wait, the VR Matrix horror movie of playing a simulator of playing a tabletop role player.
If you roll a one in the game, you roll a one for real.
Is that anything? Is that anything?
Yeah, I think that's how it works. Okay. I think that's how it works. So yeah, so that's Sarah Monroe played by Cynthia Preston. Awesome. She's like you said. I think she's the best part of this whole movie. She's
great. They fuck that up too. But
well, they always do.
they actually do a really cool job with her in the third act, and that's like, this is awesome.
Yeah, She gets kind of badass there in a minute. So yeah, Alex goes to the library to try to look up records of Mary Lou and with his boy, his male friend.
So this is, in my world, this is a one-way attraction. I do not think Alex has anything for this friend, but this friend is obsessed with Alex.
He is. He really is.
It comes out a little bit here, but it super comes out in the third act when they're all in hell.
Yeah. And in here, he's like, well, I signed up for this class because you were in it, and I did this because you were doing this. And he just wanted to be able to.
It's just a little Milhousey right now. Mm-hmm. But then it gets more obvious later.
And of course, he plays football, because why wouldn't he?
Well, okay. Let's talk about the football. What the fuck is going on with the football in this
school?
The obvious idea is they want it to have football in the thing because it's high school. Yes. And they also wanted to have a jock be a bad guy, so they did that. But they wanted Alex to be on the team. Okay. But at the same time, they wanted to create two separate teams in the same school to scrimmage against in like a sparring match. But it doesn't seem to have anything to do with the game, but they also do play the big game at some point. But also, everyone at the school is eligible to play on the team, and no one has to do tryouts. But also, they want to do tryouts. But also, the prom is around the corner, so the school year is almost over. I assume the football season is over.
You're pretty right. Yeah,
and the varsity players, like the actual jock and his team, they have no numbers on their uniforms. The numbers are on Alex's team, but not on the varsity team. What's going on here?
I don't know, because typically, like you had mentioned, if you do have a scrimmage team, you don't really want it to be like your best guys against your weakest guys, because then nobody's really learning. You want your best offense to go against your best defense. That way they can both kind of try their hardest, and that way they both can, you know, get better and better and better. So yes, it makes absolutely no sense. And the fact that, yeah, like you said, it's at the end of the school year and they're trying to redo the entire team is like, what? Okay, whatever. But Alex, he hears the voice of Mary Lou, and it guides him to score a touchdown, because of course it would.
Mary Lou has been like visiting him the whole next day. She visits him in a daydream during a test, and he misses the entire test and he's going to fail because of it. And then he's in the football field and she calls to him and it helps him make the touchdown. And then she murders his teacher.
But hold on right there. So she goes to the teacher. She takes two ice cream cones and jams them into his hand. And then, like, drills into his brain. And then Alex shows up, and his body's covered up like an ice cream sundae.
So, yeah, she's, like, full-on, like, Freddy from, like, Nightmare Part 6 here. She's just a cartoon character doing cartoon character things. And it's really no unifying theme, because, like, the thing that Mary Lou wants in the first movie is to be prom queen. And she wants to come back to life to be prom queen again. She wants her moment to be prom queen, right?
Understandable, yes.
There's actually a horror song from a musical that's called The Ballad of Sarah Barry, that's basically like, what if a murderous horror movie about trying to be prom queen? It's like 8 minutes and it's fantastic.
All right.
Which is a better movie than this.
Can I talk to you about the teacher, or do you want to keep going?
I'm going to make my point and we can jump to the teacher.
Make your point. Do it.
The point is, in that movie, everything she does is in service of this one singular goal, and it's pragmatic in the way that a ghost is going to do something pragmatic, right? So it's not really practical, but like, okay, I'll kill you in this room with this bedsheet and use it as a lasso because it's in this room, but go smash it. This one, she's like, oh, I lived in the 50s, so all of my kills are 50s themed. So she kills someone as like in like a made up ice cream stand. Later, she has a made up hair salon. Later, there's a made up five and dime.
A jukebox.
The first kill of the movie, a jukebox electrocutes a janitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, like, so she's just like 50s Freddy. That's my point. What are you going to say? You could say,
but she doesn't really have you know, like the first, like you said in part two, she wanted to become prom queen. And it was just like, you know, I guess she was killing all the people that got in her way or that really stopped her or whatever. And this one, it's just like she wants to make him like have good grades and go to college.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. This is literally my girlfriend is a ghost. It could have been a Goosebumps. No, I'm sorry, not Goosebumps. This could have been Fear Street. This could have been a Fear Street novel. My ghost girlfriend, my abusive ghost girlfriend is helping me get good grades, but I have to cover up bodies for her.
I can see that.
Spread awareness about ghost abuse.
Yeah. So I need to talk about this teacher.
Oh, God.
This teacher, his name is Mr. Walker.
Okay.
All right. Played by a gentleman named George Chuvallo.
Is this going to be like the Ferris Bueller thing?
I don't, well, I'll let you judge for yourself here. He is a former boxer, a five-time Canadian heavyweight champion and two-time world heavyweight champion from back in the 60s and 70s. And in his 93 professional fights, which includes fights against Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, and George Foreman, he was never once knocked out.
Wow. And
Muhammad Ali called him the toughest guy I ever fought.
Wow.
Right? He was also in The Fly, Jeff Goldblum movie. He was the arm wrestling dude that gets his arm kind of like, you know, popped out. Yeah. Everyone remembers. Yeah. So, you know, he had a bit of a history with those things. Yeah. Okay. That was the good news.
I knew this was coming. I could feel it. I felt it coming. The minute you said I need to talk about the teacher, I'm like, well, he's not going to tell me a good thing.
Yeah. I edited it down to be less intense, I hope. I hope
is this the story you said I should cut, or is there going to be a worse
well,
one?
Well, you know, this is it. So, okay. So let's see.
Set my expectations.
Okay, I really did tone it down so it wouldn't be as bad. But so here we, it originally started off. It was like a whole page. I'm like, no, I can't do that.
This is going to earn the episode, the trigger warning at the start.
So when he was 21, he married a 15-year-old named Lynn.
Okay.
They had five children, three of which turned into heroin addicts.
Okay.
He had Jesse, Stephen, and George Jr., who all spent time in and out of jail. Two of them died of a heroin overdose, and the third one shot himself in a hotel room while he was struggling to overcome his heroin addiction.
What's this guy's name?
This is George Chuvallo was the guy.
Okay.
This is over the course of several years that this happened. And then after all that, his wife, swallowed a bottle of pills and took her own life. Yeah. So then he became a huge speaker on anti-drugs. So, he traveled around and now he's got a lot of, cognitive brain issues from, being punched in the head so many times, and he didn't quit boxing until he was like in his 40s. So, it was all bad. And that was it. Don't do drugs, kids. Don't do drugs. And like the strong stuff, you know, you want to smoke weed, whatever, eat some shrimp, whatever. Just stay away from like heroin and all that other shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, he dealt with a lot of shit. Could you imagine?
Yeah. That's a lot for any one person to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Oof.
Just insane. And now like the wife that he's with now is like, I think I read something, I didn't go into it too deep, but she's like trying to take him for some money, but he's got brain issues and can't hold trial. And it's just all sad now.
Jeez.
So anyway, Alex's parents decide to throw him a party because he got an A. I don't know how to come back from that, but I had to say it.
Here's how we'll come back from that. This party is shot terribly because there's at one point there's streamers all around.
Mm-hmm.
The dad stands up from the table and he's like giving a toast. Mm-hmm. It is shot. The streamer is hiding half of the dad's face, not in a purposeful way. The streamer's just in the way.
I don't know, because if you remember earlier when he went to go see the guidance counselor, there was that scene where that one like plant was in the way and it was like.
That was clearly phallic, though.
Right. That was funny. I like that. He's trying to look around it and it flashes back. I like that scene. That was fun.
I kept waiting for the semi-erect plant to just stand all the way up.
Gnome name Norm style.
You can gnome name Gnorm.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, so at the party, you were upset about the streamers?
Yeah, yeah. When you say it like that, it doesn't sound like it's a legitimate complaint. It's indicative of a larger issue, Dustin.
All right, all right.
But then he, you know, he takes Sarah back home, and Sarah's upset with the way he's been acting, and he's like, she's like, you don't even say you love me anymore, and he's like, Sarah, get back in the car, because he can't say he loves her because he's being controlled by a ghostly influence, and also he's kind of just like a huge fucking dick.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
He's cheating on this woman with a ghost who may or may not even... It doesn't even seem like they're actually having sex. It seems more like the ghost gives him jerk-off fantasies.
Well, up until this point, maybe, but at this point, I mean, they seem to be like they're just fucking on the counter after he goes to the school to bury the body. But okay, I don't know.
Well, actually, I am not entirely sure what happens in the scene because it's shot very confusingly. It is. Okay, so he goes back to the school to hide the body of the dead teacher because, again, Mary Lou has killed this teacher and changed his grade to an A so that he can achieve success. So Alex goes back to the school to hide the body. He decides hiding the body is digging a grave on the football field pitch.
Yeah, because nobody will notice the freshly dug dirt at the football field.
Yeah. So that's what he decides to do, like an idiot. So as he's burying the body, you just look back at Mary Lou, who's dressed like a nurse from the 50s now for no reason. And she is wearing like some hoop structure to the skirt now. But I will point out that wouldn't you actually see them in the room, she's definitely not wearing underwear from the 50s. This is not bothering me, anyone but me, but it is bothering me. The thing that happens after this is, or that happens concurrent, is he's digging a hole for this body and burying this body. This is intercut with a sex scene. There is a scene in which they are having actual sex on the counter, right? Of the science room, I think. So it's cutting back and forth between him burying the body and him having sex with Mary Lou. But my question is he having sex with Mary Lou, or is he having like some... Because earlier... In the science room, earlier in the exam that morning, this exam that he failed, that she had to kill the teacher to give him a grade for because she was distracting him, they have this whole scene where she's like seducing him, but it's not happening. It's in his brain. So is he just having this fantasy of having sex with her while he's burying the body? Because the movie doesn't really make it clear one way or the other. Is it shoddy filmmaking or is this intentional? What's your vibe on what actually happened? How is Alex coming for real or just coming in his pants while he's digging a grave? Dustin, what is your point of view on how well Alex is coming in this movie?
The name of
this podcast is called Coming Attractions.
It's called. Now we're going to play our new game. How is Alex coming? Hey.
Hello,
yeah,
everybody. Welcome back to Found on Shelf, your favorite wacky morning radio show.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was weird because you would think just looking at it, it would be like, this is the thing that's motivating him towards going up there to have sex. Like the faster he can dig, the faster he can get up there. But it's intercut in such a way where it looks like it's happening at the same time, which makes me think it's in his mind.
So is it in his mind or is it non-linear time?
I think it's in his mind.
Okay. This is where I think too.
Because I think she's driving him to the thoughts of, hey, let's bury this thing. And you could pretend to fuck me, which of course this was the only like boob shot in the movie, and it was obviously edited in the other version. But yeah,
I'm not entirely sure she has corporeal form.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Oh well, she does kiss him one time, but
she does murder people though.
Yeah, she put the cones in the dude's hands. So I guess
the cones aren't there when he finds him.
Well, you can't really tell because he's a mess at that
point. Fair.
So yeah, anyway, that happens. Now he's back playing football. He scores a touchdown. He's number one on the honor roll. And the guidance counselor sees his grade and immediately thinks that Alex hacked into the computer system to change his grade. So she storms down the hall to go and like find him and yell at him. And Mary gets in the way and stops. And she says a great line, which was, look at those nails. It's not a manicure. It's a massacre.
Yeah, it's a good line. She used to say it with an accent too.
Yeah, good line. And that's when your beauty salon part happens.
Yeah, she drags him into the home ec class. And in Home Economics, she has set up a ghostly beauty salon. She puts her in the hairdryer chair, puts the hairdryer thing over her, and you would think the kill is, in this very weird scenario, that the 1950s hairdryer machine is going to burn her face off.
Yes.
What happens is battery acid pours out of it instead.
Yeah.
So, like,
why not?
None of the kills in this movie make, like, coherent sense for the theming. Like, here are ice cream cones. I'm going to drill your head. Here is a way I could burn your face off. Cool. I'm going to do that. But instead of using heat like the hairdryer produces, I'm going to pour battery acid out of the hairdryer. All of the kills are like this.
Yeah, they're a bit nonsensical. That's for sure. They're not establishing its own lore about how, like you said, it's like 50s style thingies, but it's not quite, I don't know. It's just not quite there.
It's reaching, but it's not grabbing.
Yeah. Like,
it's trying to find a thing. It's so close to being a thing. It's right there, right on the edge. It's like edging. Speaking of edging, how is Alex doing the next morning?
Crusty pants, but other than that, he's all right.
Okay. Yeah.
And now we get to the football thing where the jock is trying to make a measure at the school that no geeks or dweebs are allowed to play football. Mm-hmm. That's an official title. And I did not talk about our jock here. Did you ever watch the 50 Shades of Grey movies?
So I watched about 5 minutes of one, and I have a lot to say about that 5 minutes. But you know, no, I didn't watch the rest of them.
Yeah, me neither.
Have we talked about the fact that it's also Secretary?
Secretary is actually good, though.
Secretary is good. Okay, like, this is a tangent. People don't talk about this enough because we all know that 50 Shades of Grey is bad Twilight fan fiction, right? With the serial number scraped off. But no one else tells you that she also was pulling from Secretary to make that bad fan fiction, because Secretary is about being employed by a rich guy named Grey who's emotionally distant because of his upbringing, has a questionable relationship with an older woman, and is super into BDSM.
Yeah.
All plot points from 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. Secretary did it so much better.
Yeah. The Secretary is fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to Found on Shelf. Talks about Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss. Watch Secretary.
Yeah. So the jock, Andrew Douglas was his name. He's played by Dylan Neal. He was the stepfather of Anna in the 50 Shades of Grey movies, which means nothing to me because I never actually watched those movies. He was also in Bold and the Beautiful, which means nothing to me because I never watched those shows. I debated whether maybe I should pull these movies in, but there is a series of movies that he is in on the Hallmark Channel called The Gourmet Detective, in which he plays a culinary expert with crime-solving skills.
If we do the third one of those, I will have to think about who to pull in for that. I could go one of two ways.
Unfortunately, part four would have been absolutely perfect, but it is part four. Part four is called Rue the Day.
No!
R-O-U-X. Rue the Day. Right?
That's good.
And while not in a Murder, She Wrote, he did star in another Hallmark movie called Christmas, She Wrote. And did you ever watch, were you a Dawson's Creek fan at all?
I saw a couple episodes, but I didn't really watch it religiously, no.
Yeah, never.
I was a Gilmore Girls watcher. I didn't watch Dawson's Creek.
Okay. Well, in Dawson's Creek, he was the cop, Doug Witter, who later turned out to be a gay cop.
Oh,
okay. I think was kind of hinted at early and in the last season or whatever. They were like, yeah, that he is. But most importantly to me personally, he was the father of Captain John Powers on Captain Powers and the Soldiers of the Future. Are you familiar with Captain Powers?
This is the first time I've heard any of that.
So Captain Powers was this really, really cool line of toys and TV shows. So you would buy these toys and it would be like it'd be kind of playing Duck Hunt, you know, because the toys would have a little trigger on their spaceship so you could like pretend like they're firing and shooting. But when you watch the movies, you would actually have to shoot at the targets while you're watching the movies and TV shows. Yeah, so it was like interactive TV with your toys and this TV show that you're watching.
Oh, that's cool.
It was unreal. It was awesome. I had one of the ships and I had a little Captain Powers toy. It was awesome. I loved it. But anyway, so yeah, he played the dad of the main guy on that show. And that was all I have to say about him. So we can move on from that.
Just going to splice in Forrest Gump. That's all I have to say about that.
That's all I got to say about that.
That actually might be a useful clip with the tangents to go on. 1 hour and 15 minutes in. Let's talk about Alex.
So, yeah, Alex gets summoned to home ec, and the dead body of the counselor falls on him. And they have a couple of great lines in here. The first being,
"Any fucking pie."
Fantastic line, fantastic delivery. And of course, on the version that we were going to watch, it's, "I don't want no friggin' pie."
"I don't want any fucking pie."
But it's great there. And then he makes a joke that kind of becomes, or he says a line that kind of becomes a running joke where he's like, "I can't believe that you killed another person." And then she's like, "Oh, that's not a person. It's a guidance counselor."
That was funny.
And that comes later on. It comes back when the detectives there are looking at it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just shove her in an oven? She was going to burn her. They're in home ec.
Yeah, right?
Cohesion. Anyway, he decides to bury her in the football field too.
Sure. Just bury everybody in the most obvious place to ever find a body.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have the line later that the nerd says?
No, I don't think I saved that one.
Later, the nerd says that he doesn't believe Alex could commit any of these murders because Alex would never be stupid enough to bury someone on the football field.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... Great line.
There are a couple good jokes in here.
Yeah.
This is not a bad movie. It's just not a good movie.
Yeah. No, and then there's a bunch of random kind of shit happens. She gets all upset because Alex is like, "I don't want to deal with this anymore." And
is this when she's dressed as a football player?
Yeah. Then he goes,
Mary Lou Maloney from Prom Night 2 would never, never dress in drag as a football player and field. What are we doing here? She was all about the glitz and the glam. This is not a thing that would happen.
Yeah. Well, times change.
Yes. In 3 years.
Yeah. And she throws a football towards the jock dude, and the football turns into a drill and just kills him.
Yeah. It's phantasm style.
Yeah. And then he gets all pissed off and he's like, "Women, am I right?" And
that was a line he said.
Yeah. It was in the trailer, so I didn't bother cutting that out. But yeah, he decides to break up with her because she's killing too many people and he doesn't like that anymore.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Just your point of view, your life experience. Say you get involved with a homicidal ghost, and the relationship that you have tends to be kind of stressful because you have to keep burying the bodies of people that she unpredictably and quite violently kills with her supernatural powers that you have no recourse against.
Yeah, and the supernatural powers that just kind of happen to change on a whim, whatever they want to be. Yeah. Okay.
In this position, do you think it would be wise to break up with said homicidal ghost of unimaginable power?
No. I would hop in a car and drive as far away as I could.
Because she does seem to be sequestered to the high school.
Yeah, I would just leave, just go somewhere else.
Well, that's every horror movie ever.
Yeah. Like
in every horror movie, there's a point in which you could literally just get in the car and drive away, no strings attached, and survive. And the point of writing a good horror movie or a good horror novel is trying to figure out a way to circumvent that. Like, narratively, why can't we? Oh, the Overlook Hotel snows in. Why can't we? Oh, the elevator in the Evil Dead Hotel and the Evil Dead Rise blows out, so you have to go down the flight of stairs, which also you can't get down because of the earthquake that just happened, so you're stuck on the top floor with the demons. Like there's ways that you can write to explain why someone wouldn't leave. The most common one in ghost movies are like, well, we sunk all our money in here and we really can't afford to move elsewhere, which is accurate to a lot of people's living situations. But I bet if you were troubled by a homicidal ghost, you would find a place to crash for a month or two while you sold the house to recoup your loss.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd find somewhere else to go.
I'm pretty sure you could flip that house.
Have a friend or a family or somebody.
Just put a little bit of elbow grease into a couple of renovations, flip the house for a small profit, use that as a down payment on the next home. There's a way out of it, probably. For a lot of these scenarios, some of them not. So the Exorcist, my daughter's possessed. Well, now I'm fucked. I gotta deal with my daughter's possession. We can't drive away if she's the problem, right?
Right.
Okay. So that makes sense. I'm not possessed yet. The ghost is haunting the high school. I'm just fucking the ghost that's haunting the high school. But she hasn't strayed away from the high school yet. Maybe I could just leave. What I definitely shouldn't do is kiss her after I break up with her and then have her disappear inside of me.
Yeah, it's probably not a good thing. Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is Alex had it coming?
Yeah, in his pants.
I've brought this on myself.
So did he. Anyway.
This is going to be this episode is buck wild.
Well, you know what's funny enough is we're actually reaching the sex ed part of this movie.
Yeah. So they watch a sex ed video,
which is hilarious. Like a representation of a 57 personal hygiene and, you know, a Jane Doe becoming a victim of social disease.
Okay. So it said social disease and I were watching it and I say, he's going to come on and go, this woman died of being a whore. And he almost word for word says that.
Yeah.
So really cluing into what the joke was going to be here.
And then of course she's in the screen and she kind of comes out and the detectives show up and they start doing all this. And like, this is what you said. The Sarah goes out on the date with,
okay. So
the nerdy guy, Leonard. Pause it.
So detectives are now investigating the disappearances in the town. Mm. Because people were disappearing, so now they're investigating these disappearances. And Alex pretty quickly is identified as a person of interest because he's an idiot.
Yeah.
They introduce him and he's like, did you know this guy? He's like, no, we definitely weren't enemies.
And then later they're like, you referred to him in past tense. He's our number one suspect.
Like, I definitely didn't bury this guy on the football field, guys. I don't know what you're talking about. Right. So almost immediately, outs himself as like suspect number one. And then also, like you said, Sarah, because Alex has pushed her away to date a ghost, Sarah is pursuing other romantic interests. For whatever reason, she seems to be saddled with the nerdiest guy in school, which I imagine plot-wise is just because it was funny. But there's a recurring thing that I keep thinking every time she's on screen, whether she's with Leonard, the nerdiest guy in school, or Alex, the guy who is like willing to kill for ghost sex. You could do better. Honey, you could do better.
There's got to be something in between those two.
She's so furious. She's baking up a storm. She's baking so many cookies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Leonard was this guy named Jeremy Ratchford, who was oddly enough, this is recorded months before releasing it, but it kind of ties into what we talked about a little bit today. He was the voice of Banshee in the X-Men, the animated series cartoon.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they find bodies in the football field, and that's where the detectives make the line, you know, was she a teacher? He's like, nah, just a guidance counselor. Again, call back to the earlier joke. Funny. See, they had funny lines.
We had a couple. Yeah. It was not devoid of comedy. I just thought a lot of the comedy was like really forced because you hear announcements that are just like clearly jokey announcements. It felt, is it Full Moon High that Alan Arkin's a werewolf in?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Adam Arkin.
Okay.
Wait. Yeah, sorry. Oh, God. It's a Larry Cohen movie.
Shocking.
No, No, but we found one that isn't about a middle-aged man.
From a middle-aged man's point of view.
No, it's from a high school kid's point of view. We got it.
Or is it from a middle-aged man's point of view of when he was in high school?
Oh, that might be true. I saw this movie one time. Ed McMahon is in this movie.
Oh, wow.
This is from 1981.
Okay.
I will rewatch this movie before I comment on it, but I think it's probably not good.
Okay. I can't imagine it is, but...
There's a lot that's getting cut out of this episode for some reason. Cannot say a point to it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Adam Arkin, Alan Arkin, and Anthony Arkin are all in that movie.
I thought all the Arkins were.
Wow. It's like a whole Arkansas movie.
Maybe this will stay in.
The what happens here? Alex, she goes to his buddy's house and ends up killing him because he's dressed like she pretends to be Alex's sister. And as Alex's sister, she seduces his best friend who kind of is into him.
Okay, so pause.
This is a weird scene.
He goes to his friend's house for help. He's like, I've got to figure out how to save myself from possession. And like his friend is like reading out of a textbook. So what happens is like, I'm going to go get some help. And then it cuts to this house. And this cuts to the exterior shot of this house we haven't seen before at night with a voiceover that's like hauntings of a sexual nature. And then we realize that it's his friend reading out of a book. But my mind immediately went like, hauntings of a sexual nature are handled by a specific division of ghost catchings. This is Ghost Hunters SVU.
Dun dun.
Yeah. I'm like hauntings of a sexual nature. It would have been a funnier movie if it felt like a documentary procedural from the point of view of a ghost catcher trying to like exorcise Mary Lou Maloney.
All right. Yeah.
That's not a thing that would have happened at this point in time because I'm not coming out with that out of the blue, right? I'm like putting that together by referencing a whole bunch of material that did not exist at the time of this movie. Yes. So like there wouldn't have been a recourse to make the movie I just pitched. But if I was going to fix it.
But if you're going to fix it, well, hey, keep that in mind.
Mary Lou shows up to shapeshifted to be his sister and seduces his friend while he's passed out. And then she super murders him by just like ripping like his chest out.
Yeah, she's like, he got a big heart, and then just like rips his heart out.
So he,
by the way, his friend was the only one that's ever been in a he's our Murder, She Wrote connection. I'll just say that now. He's a Murder, She Wrote connection. I forgot to write it down somewhere, but he's a Murder, She Wrote.
Alex sees his dead body and then runs out the house in his motorbike. Oh, let's circle back. After he won the football game or something, she did something else for him that was like important. They got him the motorbike to drive around all summer with his
friends. I think it's because he got accepted to the college.
Yeah, that's why he got accepted to the college. So his parents buy him a motorbike. After his parents buy him a motorbike, he still seems depressed, and that's because Sarah wasn't there to congratulate him on winning. To celebrate, you know, Kim getting this motorbike, which ostensibly would mean he's not spending the summer with her if he had it. So she wouldn't anyway. But his dad is cleaning his gun and says, "Son, you seem bummed out. I couldn't help but notice that when I talked to Sarah, she didn't want to come over. Son, are you having girl trouble?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm having some girl trouble, Dad." And he's like, "Yeah, you know, she just thinks I'm cheating." Like, oh, you know, he basically just says, you know, mark me if I'm wrong. Yeah, it's fine to cheat as long as you don't get caught. And you remember that they're just side pieces to fuck. You can't take them home or something to that effect.
Yeah, it kind of played a little bit in the trailer as well. But yeah, that was pretty much the gist of the dad's fatherly advice is, hey, you know, sometimes you just got a little side piece. And that's OK. Just don't get too attached was essentially his.
And then he starts yelling about women and cocking his gun and pretending to shoot them.
Yeah, right. In Alex's face.
Yeah.
So nice, stable, healthy family dynamics.
He's definitely killed women. Like he's definitely a serial killer.
There's something going on there.
I will say that one of the first things I said in this movie was, "It's not as misogynistic as it's Alive 3."
No,
And then that scene happened. And I'm like, I don't know. I might need to retract.
Well, it's still not as.
No, it's not. It's not, because that movie is just going for it. But I was like, wow, that was crazy. And clearly the dad is meant to be wrong in this scenario, but it's also meant to be funny, which is also crazy.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. And it kind of, it comes out of nowhere. It goes nowhere.
Yeah, it doesn't come up again. It's just this scene. It should have been cut.
Yeah, there was no reason for that. It's just, I mean, there's a lot of things that like, you're like, oh, okay, that was a weird choice. But this one is like, why?
As an editor, it should have been cut.
Yes, it absolutely should have been cut.
His friend's parents see him speeding away and go, oh, this is the guy. And then the cops look at their own notes and go, yeah, this is totally the guy. So they're going to go arrest Alex. Alex is terrified that Mary Lou is going to come kill his family. So Alex goes home, makes sure they're all safe and asleep in bed, then gets a shotgun out and sits on the steps prepared to kill Mary Lou Maloney. A couple of things are very interesting about the scene. Firstly, to stay awake so that he'll be there for whenever Mary Lou comes to attack, he pops Nodos in a can of Coke.
Yeah. Is that what it is? Put Nodos in there?
Nodos in a soda. But yeah.
I would assume, yeah.
I'm going to say that if you're in a situation where you think it's a good idea to put Nodos in soda, chug that and then handle a loaded shotgun. Maybe don't.
Well, but, again, you never went to public high school.
Just things that I just don't understand. It's fair. I get it.
This is just how shit goes sometimes. Never had the loaded shotgun, but everything else checks with me. That's
okay. Well, I gotta ask. Do you think it's smart to try and shoot a ghost?
I mean, I don't think you'd accomplish very much.
And yet,
I think he just got a little spooked. You know, a little scared. Yeah.
But then the cops show up and he thinks it's Mary Lou and he shoots through the door at them. And the cops are like, drop. And they arrest him and they take him to jail for murdering everyone.
Yeah. And it's just like the local county jail.
It's the local county jail. And he's also in a sweater and jeans the whole time.
No processing. It's fine. But
some time passes for this court case and Sarah's very upset. She's like, you couldn't have killed these people. And her mom's like, well, you know how it is with mental illness. Sometimes people just snap. Think about your father. And that's all we get of that.
Yeah.
At all. And then she says, and you're going to prom, by the way. And that's final, as if she could make her go to prom. But she can't, apparently. And then she goes with Leonard, because apparently Leonard is the best she can do. Leonard, who has written a point-for-point itinerary for the evening.
minute by minute.
We are going to have fun, goddammit, if we just stick to the schedule.
Yep.
Disney mom energy. But,
yeah, big time.
And by that I mean specifically we are on a trip to Disney World and we have a schedule.
So yeah, then Mary Lou comes to visit him in his jail cell.
Yeah, she's expected him to kill himself before now so they could be together and he won't do it. And then she has the keys on her, and also two guards come to and see her. She's real. They can see her. And she kills them with lightning bolts out of her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then how does he make her go away here?
It's
not in my brain, but she goes away and drops the keys and he uses keys to escape.
Because he still denies her. And then she says, if I can't have you, nobody can.
And then
she goes to school there, but she leaves the keys behind.
Yeah. So he takes the keys, takes one of the guards' guns, holds a different cop at gunpoint to drive him all the way.
Now
to
this cop is very important, Patrick. There's something. This cop is very important.
Why is Fruit Cop important?
His name in the show was Larry. His name in the movie was Larry. His name is Brock Simpson. He is the only person that was in all four Prom Night movies.
Is he playing the same character?
Nope. Different character in all of them. He played young Nick in Prom Night 1, Josh in Prom Night 2, Larry the Cop in Prom Night 3, and Father Colin in Prom Night 4.
Isn't Father Colin like a prominent character in Prom Night 4?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about Prom Night 4.
Because it's like an exorcism movie.
But yeah, so there you go. So we can't just brush past him. He's important. So yeah, he takes the cop and holds him hostage and then goes driving off.
To prom. So it's prom, and I'm thinking... It's raining, You know, big 50s vibes.
Because if that fucking hair machine wasn't just filled with battery acid, I could get my hair done.
Exactly.
I feel it.
That's the best song from Grease, and it didn't make it to the movie.
That's wait, that wasn't in the movie?
No, it's in the jukebox in the diner. Man.
Yeah, I've seen the play so many times. I've probably seen that more than the movie.
Yeah, the movie's not bad, but they excise like some of the best songs and play them in the background. It's weird.
Losers.
Yes, it's raining on prom night. Oh my darling, what can I do?
Who cares? You're in the prom dancing. Doesn't matter if it's raining.
It's raining rain from the skies.
Oh really? Where else is it gonna rain from? Raining rain from the skies. No shit.
So they're in prom. Sarah throws away the nerd's schedule and just starts drinking.
Yeah. That's that and starts drinking in the bathroom. That was like prom. That's prom.
Alex charges in with a pistol ready to shoot the ghost again. Leonard gets murdered by Mary Lou, and then she starts attacking Sarah. Now, this is when the movie gets cool here in the beginning of the third act.
Yeah.
Because Sarah becomes a badass immediately. Like, Sarah's been fun as a cool character this whole time, but immediately she becomes a badass because she starts running. She sees the ghost, doesn't hesitate to realize that she's in shit, whatever it is, and just takes off running as the ghost is pursuing her. Then she slides to a halt and takes her heels off so that she can actually run more effectively, which is the thing I have never seen in any movie ever, even fucking Jurassic World. They're running from a T-Rex in goddamn heels. It's not going to happen. She takes them off.
Yeah, they usually like break a heel, if anything. No, she's like, no, fuck this. I got to go.
It just absolutely just runs. Then uses the heel to break the glass of the locked door so she can get through. Fucking amazing sequence. Love it. All the time wearing an absolutely stunning dress. Killer sequence. As she's running down the hall, she's trying to escape Mary Lou. He's running into the school with a gun because it's 1990, and nobody seems to think this is a problematic plot yet because it hasn't gotten to be yet.
Yeah, reality hasn't kicked in quite yet.
And so he walks into the dance and starts firing. He's like, "Don't worry, I don't want to hurt anybody. Has anyone seen Sarah?" And Sarah runs onto the stage and is like, "Alex."
Yeah.
And then Mary Lou bursts out of the stage. Burnt up and dead. She grabs Alex and she drags him down into hell. And there's a hole in the stage leading to hell.
And what does Sarah do?
He's not worth it. Honey, he's not worth it.
Sarah is ride or die. She is a badass.
And she jumps into hell to save fucking Alex, who is who so far couldn't choose her over his best friend. B, forgot their anniversary. C, said living with her would be average and hell. D, cheated on her with a ghost.
And E,
don't want any fucking pie.
Doesn't want any fucking pie. And then also, he was dumb enough to bury people in a football field.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know about you, but man, that does not seem like a good resume.
No. Although, you know what? And I didn't actually talk about Alex earlier, which I should have, because I made a note to this was like his first acting role, and he hasn't really been in a whole lot. But he was in this amazing sounding show that I've never heard of before called Lost on Earth. Hmm. Have you ever heard of this show?
No.
It's probably a good reason. There's only like six episodes of it. But it was in 1997. It was a TV show on USA. It was about a group of aliens who took the form of puppets after receiving a broadcast of The Muppet Show.
What?
Yes.
That sounds amazing.
Right? And he was like some TV broadcaster guy that was like having to deal with this.
No.
And he was like, let's make a puppet show after this.
What? I've seen this.
Have you really?
I have seen this. I pulled up the poster. Holy God. I mean, I would have been like seven, so I didn't remember this, but I have seen this show.
They got some cool looking puppets going on in there. Some weird looking shit.
And I'm pretty sure that I probably should not have seen it at seven.
Yeah, I don't know how bad it was, but they only did 6 episodes. Well, they recorded 13, but they only aired 6, and then it just disappeared forever. I found one of the episodes on YouTube, if you look it up. Lost on Earth.
I have to check that out.
Wow, that's cool that you actually saw that before. Anyhow, back to our movie here. That was the only thing he did of note. All right, so now they're all down in hell. Shane comes after her to try to stop her from saving him, Alex, because he'd rather spend his time in hell with him than have Sarah get her him in the after. I'm thinking, is that what's going on there?
Yeah. He's like, I want him now. He's down here in hell. You get the fuck away. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's when it becomes more obvious. You're like, oh yeah, no, that's you've had something going on this whole time.
Yeah. And then hell prom starts up, and of course Mary Lou's our prom queen, and she has a, what is this, like a razor bladed helmet or something to give to her prom king?
It's a crown that has like it seems to have an immersion blender inside of it.
Yeah, it's like the ninja blender without the protective shell around it.
So she's going to drill Alex's brains. But meanwhile, Sarah has assembled a flamethrower from shop class and has been burning her way through hell zombies this whole time. Again, Sarah rules. And she gets to the end. She's like, she gets to Mary.
She fights the killer jukebox.
Yeah,
she fights the killer jukebox. which is like flinging records that pop out with razor blades at her.
Again
the third act, cool.
And she's like holding Mary Lou at flamethrower point, and Mary Lou's like, are you mad? And she's like, I don't get mad, I bake. But then the flamethrower gives out and she has to like do other stuff anyway. But she is able to blow up Mary Lou by like shoving a lit fuel container down Mary Lou's dress and throwing her into a chair. And then she saves Alex, and they get in this car and just start driving. Now they're driving. Well, they get in the car to drive out of the school. And Mary Lou's ghost, after getting blown up, pops back up in front of them. And Sarah's like, "Drive!" And Alex has to once again choose between Sarah and Mary Lou.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a choice for him. He still has to hesitate and think about it.
Right? Yeah.
Was not worth this.
No, not one bit.
Anyway, he drives through Mary Lou. He chooses Sarah, and they like teleport.
And she's the one that has to hotwire the car too.
Yeah,
Sarah, more of the badassness.
Yeah, Sarah has hot wires the car so they can even drive in the first place. After they run over Mary Lou, they warp back out to the streets somewhere, and like, well, let's figure out where we are. So I figured out this like immediately, or the minute they warped somewhere. I don't know if you did. You need to let me know.
When they pulled up to the diner, I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
and then it was kind of obvious.
I was expecting them to pull up to like a diner or something, and they did. And it's a 1950s diner, so he gets out to use the phone, try and call home.
It only takes dimes.
Oh no, they're trapped in the 50s. They're still in Hell World, and Mary Lou like kills Sarah by appearing in the car and just reaching through her chest and killing her instantly. I'm like, come on, Sarah was the best thing for this movie. And then Alex is running around going, you win, or whatever.
Yeah, she got Sarah. He's trying to like shake all the cars, but nobody's paying attention to him.
And it just spirals out into nothing. And you're like, what were you guys going for with this last one?
Yeah, so it was kind of like, it was supposed to be that, like him shaking the car was like nobody saw him. Nobody could see him. Like he was a ghost of his own sort in this world now, to where people couldn't actually see him or interact with him.
That didn't translate to screen.
No, which would have been an interesting angle to now take part 4. I mean, part 4 would have been interesting if you continued this story of him now being a ghost in the 50s and trying to come back. Like,
again, you could have taken an interesting direction.
Yeah, I think part 4, like, is, I read a little bit about it, and it was something like you said about the pastor, about the church, and he killed people or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Mary Lou or any of the other 3 pre-existing Promite films.
So, that happens. It seems to happen with a lot of these movies. They start going off a little too far, and then they can't reel themselves back into what they need to.
Mm-hmm. And then you get a sequel.
Yeah, and that was Prom Night 3. That was about the end of it. Yeah, it was kind of it was one of those endings that was meant to be like a cliffhanger-y type thing, but then it just didn't, there wasn't enough of a payoff for it, I think.
Yeah, it was a stinger, but it didn't sting.
No, it was just kind of irritating. Well, all right. I think I kind of touched on everything I needed to touch on as far as some of the behind-the-scenes stuff goes. I just sprinkled that in throughout the episode. There was a lot of fascinating stuff that I found out about this movie. So, Patrick, I'm going to ask you a question.
Prepare to beat off.
No, not that one.
In a way, I brought you here to offer you a job. You think you can do it better, so here's your chance.
Yeah, one was a statement, one was a question. So, change three things about this movie. You have to change three things and only three things to try and make this movie a better movie. So what you got?
First thing, we do the thing I said earlier, and that is Mary Lou possesses Alex instead of trying to control him with sexual influence. She just outright possesses him.
Okay.
Now we're in a different movie altogether.
Yeah.
Is Sarah becomes your main protagonist, and it's she kind of like shifts in a lot sooner to being a badass just because you're focusing more and more on what Sarah's doing and less on Alex specifically, right? The movie starts to like shift down the middle.
Yeah.
And I forgot my overall summary of this film, but I'll come back to it in a minute because I think that it's worth exploring. But thirdly, what do we want to do for the third thing? Because those two things, I think, alone give us a completely different film. You know what? Thirdly, I'd get rid of the football subplot. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Okay. Except for the fact that they just wanted a football player.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah.
This movie, I sent you a text. Mm-hmm. This movie is just shitty, Christine.
See, and I got to say, I still like it. I like it as a standalone film. I think if it was just a movie by itself, much like My Boyfriend's Back, just a standalone little movie by itself, I think it would have been okay.
But am I or am I not wrong that it is also a lot like Christine? Right after the fact that like towards the end of his like relationship with Mary Lou, he's literally dressing like a greaser and talking like a greaser from the 50s, which is a thing that the main character in Christine does as the car continues to possess him.
Yeah, well, you know, as soon as you get a motorcycle and a leather jacket, you're just a whole new person. Yeah, I think, I mean, it could have been better for sure. I think it could have done with being a little bit more of a spoof and more of the humor angle. Like, if it would have gone funnier, I think it could have worked a little bit better. That's what I would have gone with it. I would have gone more funny than horror. But, like, all the stuff that got edited out of it was, like, too much blood splattering around, cuss words, the one boob, and, you know, bloody fingers. And that was pretty much it that got cut out of it. But I think if they would have went for more of the spoofing angle, like an actual spoof,
mm-hmm.
like they were trying to do, it could have been better. It's what you got. I enjoyed it as a standalone film. I think if I went back and watched parts one and two and then watched this, I would not enjoy it at all.
Yeah, that's pretty much the experience because it's not a terrible movie. It's just by comparison, I'm not even in the same ballpark.
That's kind of the weird thing that I'm noticing about these part three movies.
A lot of part three movies. Yeah, we're going to get there.
It's like some of them work great if you don't know anything else about the other movies. And you're like, okay, this is good. And then when you hear about the other movies, you're like, oh, wait, no, it's not that good.
Wait till we get to Camp New Beginnings.
And then some movies you watch and you're like, this is fucking stupid. But then if you actually watched, you know, the first couple ones, you might just be like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. Now I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very weird. This is a very interesting journey of the threequels that we're going down here.
Yeah, because there by the time you get to the third movie, it's almost never even they're recognizable as the original film. Like the second,
yeah.
A lot of times in these movies, the second movie is basically just a remake of the first movie with things with the serial numbers filed off. A couple things changed, a couple things different, you know. But Rocky II and Rocky are the same movie. Right.
Yeah.
So, but by the time you get to Rocky III, well, now you got Mr. T. Now and a robot, whole thing's different. Whole thing's different. Robot butlers and Mr. T changes the whole thing. So this is kind of the thing. Same thing. It's like you get to the third movie, and it's just different altogether. First sleepaway camp, Angela is a shy, repressed girl. Second sleepaway camp, she's a weirdo who's obsessed with everyone following the rules. Third sleepaway camp, she's just a murder freak. She's just here to murder people. And she's actually kind of tired of it. It's great. I love Sleepaway Camp 3 because Angela's so over it in Sleepaway Camp 3. It's great. I can't wait to get there. But like Leprechaun, he's got to kill people for his gold. Leprechaun 3, yeah, he's still doing it, but he's doing it in Vegas and he's blowing people up. What the fuck?
Leprechaun 3 was awesome.
It is. I like it. It's
not bad. Well, and then Leprechaun 3 brought in the whole like turning the other people into Leprechaun. Like that was completely out of nowhere.
Yeah. So like that's the real point. It's like it's not that it's not awesome. It's just so divorced from anything that came before it. You know, Friday the 13th Part 3. That's every Friday the 13th movie is the same movie. That's not really anything there.
But then you get Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3. That was an amazing Part 3 movie. That kind of still stuck to its roots of as to what movie it was, but took its own thing. Like you could watch that movie on its own and still be like, fuck yeah.
Well, you know, the first movie is a horror movie that's structured like a nightmare. The third movie is the X-Men.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, again, Wes Craven is doing some things because he rewrote the script for Part 3. Similar to the first movie, but it is still divorced from the first movie by virtue of it being the X-Men. Now, less divorced than the second film, which is a great movie, but for different reasons.
Yeah, that'll be a whole nother. Did you think we'd get that long on Prom Night Part 3?
No, but like half of it is us talking about shit that's not making it to air.
Well, that's true. I guess you got a point there. But all right, I think that wraps it up. We good? I think we're good.
We're good.
I got my outro here. Yeah, wraps it up for this episode of Found on Shelf. So if you enjoyed this podcast, like, subscribe, rate, share, do all that fun stuff that you're supposed to do to help make us feel better because we see more people listening to us. And check us out at foundonshelfpod.com. You can leave voicemails, send some feedback to us. There's a little store on there. You can buy some merch. You can do all kinds of cool stuff on there. And for all your social media needs, just look up Found on Shelf Pod or whatever, or email us, foundonshelfpod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show. Offer suggestions. We're not taking any. Well, we'll take some suggestions. If you've got a good Part 3 idea, I'd like to hear it. Maybe it's something we don't have on the old docket, but we'll definitely give it a thought. Have any final words there for us or anything you need to add to that?
Yes. When the fiery hailstones fall from the sky, that was our forecasted for later in the day, make sure to bring a lead umbrella because that will also protect from the radiation from wormwood.
Yes. And be sure to buy the official Found on Shelf locust spray coming soon to a convenience store near you.
Stay safe.
Good night.
Stop the with the wiggity wax stuff.
can we talk about how the song
sounds like a candle? What?
Can we talk about how the song in the trailer and the closing credit song did not match the tone of the movie in any way, shape, or form?
No, because it's 50s music all the way through, and then all of a sudden, like late 80s, late 80s, early 90s hip hop, but like the G-rated Disney movie version of hip hop. So it's straight up like go ninja go vibes.
That was a very odd choice, and especially for them to use it in the trailer was very odd.